The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome, welcome. It's another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. Marcus Papp joined by Reggie Rizzou. On today's episode, now hiring postal workers in Antarctica. We'll explain NASA's new lighthouse on the moon, and on this day in history, for better or worse, the first public bus ride takes place. That's coming up on Cool Stuff. Getting things started, Reggie, I want to pose a question to you. Were you aware there's a post office in Antarctica?
I actually was. I did know that.
Well, good on you, because I had zero clue, and the immediate question was, who the heck are you delivering things to? Because no one lives there.
There's scientists there. You got to deliver packages to them, right?
So you think you need a post office for about the five scientists that reside there that you couldn't just make a drop when the time was right?
Yes.
That made sense to you.
It makes sense, yes.
Sure. Got to have that post office. We need to sort these five letters that showed up. Well, the name of the office is Port Lockroy, situated on Gaudier Island, which is appropriately part of the bay also named Port Lockroy in Antarctica. And if you're into sorting postcards and watching penguins, we may have a job opportunity of a lifetime for you here. Assuming, of course, that you're first willing to move to the UK if you don't already live there. The UK Antarctic Heritage Trust, which owns and operates Port Lockroy in Antarctica, is hiring a team of five for its 2024-25 season, which starts in late October or early November and lasts through March of 2025. Job duties include sorting around 80,000 postcards sent by cruise ship passengers to the penguins of the continent each year. I'd love to know what the heck you're sorting those for and where they ultimately wind up. Per the Heritage Trust, about 18,000 people cruise to Antarctica in the Southern Hemisphere's summer months. Those would be December through February, which has me wondering, is each person sending multiple postcards to the penguins, or are they bringing some from their friends and family too? The math doesn't add up here, Reggie. 80,000 postcards, 18,000 people cruising down there. And I mean, I suppose they're saying 18,000 during those 3 months, but I can't imagine the difference is being made up the rest of the year if the Southern Hemisphere's summer months are the most popular.
Yeah, I'm a little lost on the math there as well. And I agree with you. Why do they need to sort these? It's not like the penguins are actually going to read them.
Or even go to a mailbox to pick them up. Assigned mailboxes for each penguin. Now, bear in mind that if you take this job, your social life and daily hygiene are both likely to take a hit unless you're already leading a showerless lifestyle, which very well could mean you're not doing much socially anyway. According to Smithsonian Mag, the team of five will bunk together in one room and be mostly off-grid with very little phone or internet access. There's no running water, so no toilets, and showers come only when passing cruise ships allow them to use their facilities. In fact, the application reads as follows, quote, "We have no running water on the island, so washing facilities are very basic. Water is collected in jerry cans from visiting ships. There are no shower facilities at Port Lockroy, so staff are expected to be comfortable living with these limited washing facilities, yet still keeping hygiene levels high. Visiting ships will offer showers approximately once per week, but when weather conditions are poor, you could go up to 2 weeks without visitors or a shower," end quote. Cruise ships are also integral to keeping the post office stocked with supplies, so bear in mind if you'd like to eat, that's probably something to think about as well. Per an Instagram post from the Heritage Trust, the base is looking for the following five positions: one base leader, one shop manager, and three general assistants. Now, despite the three unique titles, the Heritage Trust notes on its site that all team members are expected to contribute equally with chores, including carrying 5-gallon cans of water, lifting and carrying 33-pound boxes, digging a lot of snow every day, carving out steps in the snow and ice so visitors can safely land, and unloading boats on slippery rocks. That sounds pretty treacherous. Not sure of the workman's comp situation there, but I'm guessing that if you get hurt, you're stuck waiting on a cruise ship for potential medical care or to be taken off the continent anyway. So I guess don't get hurt and try to keep your wits about you. Applicants from anywhere in the world can apply, but you have to be living in the UK by the start of team selection, and you must be legally able to work in the UK. The team will undergo extensive training there in August and September, but hopefully you're listening to this episode on the day of its release, because I hate to say it, there is a deadline, and that deadline is March 18th. That's today. Again, if you're listening to this on the day of its release. If you already missed it, I'm sorry for crushing your dream, but perhaps another opportunity will arise in the next year or so. These applications, again, are for the season starting in October, November, and ending in March of 2025. So get ready for next March. For some background on Port Lockroy, the bay itself was originally discovered in 1904 by French explorer Jean-Baptiste Charcot and named after Edouard Lockroy, a French politician who himself is kind of a fascinating historical figure. Look him up sometime if you're so inclined. Edouard, that's spelled E-D-O-U-A-R-D, E-D-O-U-A-R-D, Lockroy. The facility there was originally established as a research base by British forces during World War II, 1944 to be specific. That was part of Operation Tabarin. That was the code name given to the secret British expedition to the Antarctic during the war. Research continued there until 1962, when the operations were shifted to another base in Antarctica on the Argentine Islands. Port Lockroy was essentially shut down until being restored in 1996. That led to its becoming one of the most popular tourist attractions in Antarctica. I hate to say this, I don't know that there are too many tourist attractions in Antarctica, so kind of feels like a title by default.
I was just going to say the same thing. I'm like, what are the other choices? This is our old schoolhouse? No, they don't have that. Or this is where war happened? No, they don't have many options. I do have to say, this whole five person in a small living space, not showering, it doesn't sound that much different from the Mars training that they're doing for some people, where they have, what, five or eight people living in a tiny space, just working every day. Why can't we combine those efforts?
I thought you were going to say college. I thought you were going to say college.
No, I'm a big fan of showering every day, even when I was in college.
Well, good on you, buddy.
I like my personal hygiene.
In Puerto Rico, we call ourselves Boricua. We are proud, passionate, and full of life. On our island, adventure finds you. Strangers aren't strangers for long. The size of the audience doesn't change the beauty of the music. And we celebrate every last ray of sun. Live Boricua.
A few weeks ago, we talked about Odysseus, or Odie, the private lander that was shutting down after 2 weeks on the moon. As we said, NASA paid Intuitive Machines to hitch a ride with Odie with some supplies. NASA has now announced that one of the items that traveled with Odie was the Lunar Node 1, or LN-1, which was the first test to have a lighthouse on the moon. According to NASA, the LN-1 is a radio beacon designed to support precise geolocation and navigation for landers, surface infrastructure, and astronauts. It can digitally confirm positions on the moon relative to other craft, ground stations, or rovers that are on the move. It can also be used in space to help with orbital maneuvers and guiding landers to a successful touchdown. Evan Anzalone, principal investigator of LN-1 and navigation systems engineer at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama, said, quote, "Imagine getting verification from a lighthouse on the shore you're approaching. Rather than waiting on word from your home port, you left days earlier. What we seek to deliver is a lunar network of lighthouses offering sustainable, localized navigation assets that enable lunar craft and ground crews to quickly and accurately confirm their position instead of relying on Earth," end quote. After it was deployed following a touchy landing with Odie, they tested the beacon by lighting it for 30 minutes. Now, the original plan was to have it running around the clock until February 29th, but due to the position on the moon from Odie's bad landing, they were unable to accomplish that. However, it was with the help of LN-1 that allowed Odie to even land at all. Hours before its descent to the moon, Odie's laser rangefinders, which were there to allow the lander to find a safe spot to touch down, well, they malfunctioned. So the flight engineers updated a software patch to make it so the LN-1 could navigate ODI. The demonstration for LN-1 was deemed successful, and NASA hopes to build out a network of lighthouses. Eventually, they would like to build out this type of network on Mars, which would allow future missions to get updates within seconds versus waiting on Earth to send the information, which can take up to 20 minutes. Anzalone added that, quote, "That's a very long time for a spacecraft pilot making a precision orbital adjustment or humans traversing uncharted Martian landscapes. LN-1 can make lighthouse beacons for every explorer, vehicle, temporary or long-term camp, and site of interest we send to the moon and to Mars," end quote. So are you ready to have lighthouses on the moon and Mars, Marcus? Does that sound interesting, intriguing in any way?
Well, it does. I don't know how it's going to affect me. I mean, presumably I can't see this lighthouse from Earth, right?
No, it's basically lighthouse, I think, is a kind of vague or generalized term of more just a beacon for them to, it's not going to be, here's this bright light shining in the sky. It's more your instruments will be able to read this beacon and tell you where you are.
Oh man, I'm picturing the Netscape Navigator logo in my head and was assuming it'd be swirling around up there and I'd be able to pull out a telescope and have a look, but that's cool. I understood the practical sense behind this. So yeah, I mean, every day it feels like we get a little bit closer to having a regular presence on the moon. And I know we're still a long ways away from that, but the stories that we talk about on this show, it feels like we're gradually inching our way there.
Yeah, they commented about, you know, Mars having that 20-minute gap before you can receive communications. You know, even on the moon, it's minutes. Those minutes could be precious when you're trying to navigate a landing, that if you could have the information in seconds versus minutes, that's a huge benefit.
How long before McDonald's is setting up shop on the moon, Reggie? That's the big question.
The McMoon burger?
I mean, business might be slow in the early going. They may have to recruit a team of five to go up there, much the way they do for the Antarctic post office.
At least I feel like the moon would have more tourist places to visit. You have the original lunar landing. You have some of the other things that have landed there. I mean, this feels like it's got more to see than Antarctica.
What a great sightseeing tour. Here we have the original lunar landing, and here we have some other things that have landed here. I hope you've enjoyed your tour. Please exit through the gift shop. Oh, a moon keychain. Only $75.
I think I'd be willing to pay $75 for whatever I paid to get to the moon.
Fair enough.
In Puerto Rico, we call ourselves Boricua. We're proud, passionate, and full of life. On our island, adventure finds you. Strangers aren't strangers for long. The size of the audience doesn't change the beauty of the music. And we celebrate every last ray of sun. Live Boricua.
Taking a look at this day in history, on March 18th, 1662, the very first public buses started. You heard that correct. Now, technically, these were horse-drawn carriages. Now, the service introduced in Paris was abandoned in 1675, and public transport did not return to the streets of any major city until 1895. The idea was promoted by Blaise Pascal, who was a man of many talents. Physicist, philosopher, mathematician, inventor, author.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Yep. A sign of the times. I have 17 different titles.
Yeah. Now, he was also the governor of Poitou, the Duke of Ronanes. See, it just keeps going.
He was a local bartender.
He thought it was such a good idea that he decided to back it, and seven horse-drawn carriages were built, capable of carrying eight passengers. It received the royal blessing of King Louis XIV and granted the Duke a monopoly, which meant no other competitors could come in and basically try to compete against this. If they did, their horses and vehicles would be confiscated.
By the way, Pascal died at age 39, so he was all of these things and didn't even make it to 40.
Well, I don't think a lot of people made it in 40 in 1662, so it seems fair.
Yeah, but to be 25 different things? I mean, I had to learn about Pascal in high school math, and now here we are talking about him setting up public bus systems.
I know.
Man, this guy, at what age did you get out there and get your career started?
It makes you feel like a slacker, doesn't it?
It sure does. It really does. Here we are hosting a lowly podcast. By the way, I would love to listen to the Pascal pod if you were around today. I'm sure that would be highly enlightening.
All right, we're going to start with a little math, head over to physics. We'll come back to my idea to have a horse-drawn carriage. Eventually get around to philosophy.
Now let's ask why with the philosophy minute from Blaise Pascal.
So the grand opening ceremony of the service happened on March 18th, and the Karasankasu, or in English, five soul coaches, as buses they were called, began their work. So a ride in the carriage cost 5 sous, a sou being the least valuable coin in the French currency.
So a penny. I mean, if we think about it in those terms, roughly.
Yeah, it'd be like us going in and throwing up a penny to get the ride. Now, there were conflicting theories concerning the failure of the enterprise. One researcher thought that the service was very well received at first, but since people were riding for amusement only after a few weeks, the popularity of the buses waned and they just kind of faded away. Some suggested the problem was failed product market fit, as carriages were only available for nobility and not peasants or soldiers. You know, the people could actually use it and maybe pay that lowest valuable currency. When the buses returned 150 years later in 1826 in Paris, the omnibus could carry up to 42 passengers with 3 horses needed to pull it. With the omnibus, commoners and gentry were allowed to use it. New York followed shortly after in 1828. Now, you're probably wondering, why are we calling it a bus? Well, the term for bus is short for omnibus, which is Latin for all, omnibus. And in France, the bus routes were known as omnis. So that's kind of where we got the idea of bus. It was omnibus. Now, Pascal, as you mentioned, is known today for some of his other achievements, including an early calculating machine and work on atmospheric pressure, or Pascal's law. He also invented the syringe and hydraulic press.
Why not? Invented the syringe, the hydraulic press, developed a formula for better understanding atmospheric pressure, philosophized on a few things.
And supposedly, he kind of laid the groundwork for Leibniz and Newton. He kind of inspired them in their science or study of sciences.
This guy packed a lot into 39 years. That's all I'm saying. Did. I know I'm relentless in bringing this up, but wow.
I know. I barely got out of bed in 39 years. Do I have to?
Why can't you be more like Blaise Pascal?
That's what I tell my son from now on. Stop playing those games. Be more like Blaise Pascal.
Did you know Pascal had already invented the syringe by age 4? Get to work, kid.
Before we take off, I do have a quick email that came in, and unfortunately, it's not a complaint, Marcus. I'm a little disappointed about it.
I was all but certain it would be a complaint with how frequently you solicit those.
Now, this one actually goes back to the story you had where we're using AI technology.
Oh, yes, the story about the electrocardiograms using AI to predict sudden cardiac arrest.
Yeah, so this comes from an software engineer out of Germany. That's how he said, a quick explainer from a software engineer out of Germany. A hallucination generally occurs in generative models, such as text or image generation, and it happens as the model in general tries to predict what should come next. It might favor a falsehood over the truth if the next word just fits its training model better. With the Cedars-Sinai case, the AI model used here is not a generative model. The article seems to point more towards a classical pattern matching model. This is especially powerful, as a deep learning algorithm is just way faster and way more precise as a human to detect subtle patterns or signals. The model will most definitely be contained by the researchers and cannot be modified publicly. You know, I mentioned that as a concern, that how much will it be contained? Or we kind of talked about that. He added, and I would assume that any advancement of the model is done by the researchers themselves, feeding it more data that has been validated to be accurate. I'm excited about more of this, as humans' cognition has limits, biases, and tires out. There was a study in the 80s or 90s that showed doctors a series of brain scans and asked them to detect tumors. Not only have doctors missed tumors multiple times, a lot of them had missed the picture of a monkey, which was inserted into the image as part of the test. An image recognition and pattern matching algorithm would have caught both the tumor and the monkey with a much higher accuracy. Hope that helps. Love the show, by the way. You two have amazing energy, and I'm looking forward to each episode. I was sad, he said, when Jackson retired the first run, but I'm super glad the show can continue with you two on the helm. Keep it up. That was from Robert.
Oh, thank you, Robert. We appreciate that. And thanks for contributing your knowledge to the show. So I guess one thing that I took away from Robert's words there is that we don't have to worry about hallucinations being an issue in this particular instance, Reggie.
Yes, and that's good to hear. That was my one concern, is that if that could happen, what problems I would have. But it sounds like this should be pretty self-contained and shouldn't have that issue. And one other quick follow-up. This one occurred to me while I was driving home from my parents' house, and I just kind of feel like an idiot. I mentioned in the history of, you know, the first.com domain. I was talking about that and how Google accidentally sold Google.com and they're offering to buy it. And I commented on the specific amount. It was $6,006.13. I'm like, that's just weird. Then it occurred to me, it looks like it says Google. That's why it's that exact amount. 6,006.13 is like basically a number version that looks like Google. Well, so I wanted to get that off my chest because I kind of felt like an idiot for not picking up on that right away.
I wouldn't label you an idiot. I would wonder, while that's an interesting fact, did Google just go in and say, you know what, you would have sold it to us for $5, but we want to pay a number that looks like Google when written out?
Or it could have been, you would have sold it to us for $20,000, but we want to do it this way because it's more interesting.
I mean, sure, but I don't know any seller that's going to say, yeah, you know what? You got me. It looks cool when written down on paper. So why don't you give me $14,000 less? That's okay. I mean, you're right. And I'm glad you brought that back around, but I would still love to know the negotiation process there and how both parties arrived at that being an agreeable number.
Well, remember, they did end up paying double that because all the money went to charity. So I guess they did Google Square, not Google Square. That'd be way more. Google times two. All right. Now that I got that off my chest, thanks for joining us on another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. I'm Reggie Rizzou. He's Marcus Paff. If you want to reach out to us, leave comments like Robert did. CoolStuffCommute@gmail.com. Also, like us, follow us, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We'll be back with more cool stuff tomorrow.